He serves the purpose.
Okay. So we're here on Daf Pei Beis. So the Mishnah speaks about Ubra Sheiricha, and the Braisa gives us the rule that we should try as best as we can to calm her down through various methods. She has this taiva to eat, so maybe we can do it this way, do it that way. And finally, the Braisa formulates the halacha of pikuach nefesh. The Gemara later on, Daf Pei Hei, is going to derive the halacha of pikuach nefesh from the pasuk v'chai bahem v'lo shiyamos bahem. So this is, of course, a very important sugya. Case of people whose lives are in jeopardy, and we have to violate Isurim to save them. Even the Isurim, like Yom Kippur, which is an Isakares, even Shabbos, the Gemara is going to say later on, we're going to violate the Shabbos to save someone's life. And this is based on V'chai Bohem. The Torah says V'chai Bohem. Of course, the Gemara is going to establish here on Pei Beis, Amud Beis, that if it's one V'chai Bohem against another V'chai Bohem, if it's you kill him or I'll kill you and somebody's going to die, then we don't have any option except to neutralize one V'chai Bohem against the other. We can't decide which V'chai Bohem takes precedence over which. And therefore, Shevi Altasa, you know, you've got to submit yourself to die rather than kill someone. And based on a Hekesh, we're going to derive the conclusion that even in the case of Gili Arayis, where no one's going to die, but nevertheless, you cannot violate Gili Arayis for the sake of V'chai Bohem. And that's based on a Hekesh in the parish of Naar Murasa, between Naar Murasa and Rotzeh. Then we have the Pasuk, B'chol Nafshecha, and that teaches us that in the case of Avodah Zorah, one is not permitted to violate Avodah Zorah to save his life, and then we don't apply the principle of V'chai Bohem. The question arises as to whether all these dinim in these three cases are the same. For example, Tosfos in Sanhedrin says that the case of Ritzicha is very unique, because you do have V'chai Bohem in the case of Ritzicha, just that you have another V'chai Bohem. So if Shimon is going to be killed by Reuven, why should Reuven's life be saved and Shimon's life be taken? Or the other way around, so you're really in a stalemate, and therefore, Shevi Altas. But supposing, for example, Tosfos says, you would kill someone passively. For example, they would throw you onto a baby, and the sheer weight coming down on the baby would kill the baby, then Tosa says you don't have to apply the principle of Ritzicha, of Yehard Val Yafor, because they thrust you onto the baby. So you're not making that decision. You're not actively saving your life. You don't have to give up, you know, you don't have to kill yourself in order to save someone's life. You're not allowed to kill someone else to save your life. But if you're passive, Tosa says, then you know, imagine the case where you're standing on a roof and a wind is going to blow you off the roof. So in that case, if you'll kill the baby on the bottom, would you have to kill yourself or allow yourself to be killed in order not to allow the wind to throw you down? So if we assume that the wind throwing you down makes you passive, so you haven't made that decision. But in the case of Gili Arayis, for example, there, it makes no difference, L'chora, whether or not you're active or passive. Because what the Torah is saying about Gili Arayis is that the Avera is such an Avera Chamura, it's such a severe violation, that it overrides V'chai Bohem. And basically there is no Heter of V'chai Bohem. So we can start from the following premise, and that is that until the Torah tells me V'chai Bohem, I have to assume that the law of the Torah, the Avera of the Torah, is more Chamur. I need a pasuk. I need some sort of source in order to permit me to violate an avera. You know, you're guilty here until proven innocent. Because the Torah says, don't do this, don't do that, don't eat nevela. You want to say, well, life takes precedence over nevela. Prove it to me. So the Gemara Daf Pei Hei invokes this proof of v'chai bohem v'lo shiyamos bohem. Mashma, it would seem that without v'chai bohem, I have the Avera, it stands on its own two feet. How can I override the Avera, even for the sake of human life? The Chiddush of the Torah is V'chai Bohem V'lo Shiyamos Bohem. But that Chiddush doesn't apply in the case of B'chol Nafshecha. namely the case of Avodah Zarah. So for the sake of Avodah Zarah, I can't save my own life because there's no V'chaibahem. Once I suspend the operation of V'chaibahem, I'm back to square one, and the Torah says I can't do this, I have no heter, I have no license to do it. And therefore I can't violate Avodah Zarah in order to save my own life, there's no V'chaibahem. So again, we're seeing two different concepts here. In the case of Ritzicha, what we're seeing is a contradiction, seesawing back and forth between one V'chai Bohem and another V'chai Bohem, and therefore I'm left in a stalemate. I can't decide which life is, you know, as the Gemara says, which blood is redder than which blood. So I just have to be passive. Let the punches roll, so to speak. In the case of Gilui Arayos, the Torah says, B'chol nafshecha. There the Torah is saying, hey, you know, let's suspend, let's neutralize the principle of V'chai Bohem. Now I can say that the Iser of Gilui Arayos is more chamur, is more severe than even human life, because there's no V'chai Bohem. Once I neutralize V'chai Bohem, then I go back to my original premise, and that is that if there's no heter to violate the Torah law. See, on the one hand, the Torah says V'chai Bohem, and the Torah says V'chol nafshecha. So we have really Shnei Ksuvim HaMachishim Zetzeh. You know, V'chai Bohem tells me that life is more important than the Avera. It takes precedence. Then you have the possible called Nafshecha that says the Avera takes precedence over human life. And the Gemara reconciles this contradiction by saying that the Chol Nafshecha is referring to only one Avera in the Torah. And that is Avodah Zarah. Why was Avodah Zarah picked out? You know, why would we choose Avodah Zarah? I mean, the Pasuk says, V'yahavtas Shem Elokech B'chol Levavcha, B'chol Nafshecha. It doesn't say Avodah Zarah in the Pasuk. I mean, every mitzvah is an expression of Avas Hashem. Why is Avodah Zarah more of an Avas Hashem than any other mitzvah? So you're going to have to say, maybe because Avodah Zarah is Shakul Kenegin Kol Tar Kula, and a person who violates Avodah Zarah, he denies the Torah and he's a Mumar, and so forth and so on. You know, it's the first of the Aseret Hadibros, but whatever it is, it comes out that we have to limit the chiddush of B'chol Nafshecha in light of the chiddush of V'chai Bohem. In other words, since V'chai Bohem is a chiddush and B'chol Nafshecha contravenes V'chai Bohem, now I go back to what it was before the chiddush of V'chai Bohem. And that means that I can't override Avodah Zarah for the sake of Pikuach Nefesh. So there's no Pikuach Nefesh, there's no V'chai Bohem, there's Avodah Zarah. I mean, one could have ostensibly argued that maybe there's a special chiddush in Avodah Zarah, because if I'm being forced to violate Avodah Zarah at gunpoint, I don't have any belief in the Avodah Zarah. So maybe this is the you know, this famous sugya of Abayin Rava Mishum Ava Mishum Yira, that if a person violates Avodah Zarah only because of Yira, meaning he's afraid he's going to be killed by the Goyim, so he's not punished. In a Jewish law, in a Jewish court of law, it means that it mitigates the Aveir a little bit. So maybe the Torah wants to be Mechadish here, that even though it's not the full-fledged violation of Avodah Zarah, nevertheless, the halacha, the principle of V'chai Bohem is suspended. And if V'chai Bohem is suspended, then I go back to square one and I can't violate the Aveira even for the sake of V'chai Bohem. And that's how severe Avodah Zarah is, and that comes under the pasuk of B'chol Nafshach.
I don't understand. If it's by force, I don't understand. If someone's forcing someone to do it, then you're saying that maybe...
Forced by gunpoint, I mean.
Right, yeah. You're saying it might not be over?
Right, it's not the full-fledged violation, because you know, when you bow down to an idol in order to save your life, but not because you believe in the idol.
You don't really believe.
You know, you don't say, Zeh Eli, you know, this is not my God. So that mitigates the Avera. It's a Maisa Avera, but without the commitment to, you know, to accept this idol as an all-powerful God.
Therefore, he doesn't have to give his life.
So I would have thought that he doesn't have to give his life, and yet the Torah says he does have to give
his
life.
Even in this case.
In this scenario, the Torah says that there's no V'chaima. So the guy puts a gun to your head, he says, your life, worship the idol, and you worship the idol. Inside, you don't believe in the idol. But it's irrelevant, because there's no V'chaima. No, it's even the basic Avera of Avodah Zarah. The Gemara has a sugya called Avizrayut Avodah Zarah. You know, there are four lav of Avodah Zarah, but there's another lav besides the four lav of Avodah Zarah of Lo Yidbak Biyotcha Me'uma Min Acherim, which means you're not allowed to even benefit from an Avodah Zarah. If somebody worships this Asherah, I can't have Hanah from this Asherah. That's a regular violation of a lav. that doesn't incur achiv misa. It's not one of the four avodos, which, or the avodah amyuchedes to that avodah zara, which would incur achiv misa. Here, it's just a separate lav, like any other lav in the Torah. And yet the Gemara has a sugya that if they say to you that you have to enjoy the benefits of the asherah in the case of a chole, he's not allowed to benefit from the atzi asher even at the pain of death, because once it comes under avodah zara, that's called avodah zara, it's a subcategory of avodah zara, it has the status of b'chol nafshecha, and we suspend the operation of chai b'hem of pikuach nefesh. One of the issues that comes up here in this sugya, which I found very fascinating, is what happens in those cases where the halacha is v'chai b'hem, with the exclusion of these three. And what happens if a person wants to voluntarily give up his life? So let's say they force me to eat nevela. And we're not talking about a public situation, even in private. So the law is that v'chai b'hem v'lo shiyamos, you eat the nevela rather than give up your life. Can a person voluntarily give up his life? He has in the back here a section. He calls it Bishar Mitzvah She'eno Be'eharik Val Yavra Imra Shoy Lahachmer Alatzmo. Can he accept upon himself a Chumrah? And Tosu says that this seems to be addressed by the Yushalmi. He quotes Yushalmi in Shviz. And the Yushalmi tells the story about Rabbi Abba Bar Zimra. And he was visiting a guy, and the guy said to him, "Achol neveli, neveli v'lo katil nolach, I'll kill you." And the response was, "This is again Rabbi Abba." He said to him, "Ibois lemiktale k'tol, I'm not going to eat the nevela. You want to kill me? Kill me." And the Ramban quotes this Yushalmi. Tosis quotes the Yushalmi. Mistava b'tzina hayo. We have no reason to believe that this was b'farhesia, where the dinim changed as far as available. And therefore, muchach mikan shamach hamachmir al atzmo, afshem min adin hayo rashoy lechos anavela, is tavol of bracha. And this engendered a whole controversy in this Tosis. So if you wanna look at the Tosis, it's in Avodah Zarah of Zion of Yibes. I mean, that's not on our agenda today. The Rambam, in Hilchas Yisod HaTorah Perikei Halacha Daled, ballistically argues with this, and he establishes the rule is that if there's no chiyuv of yehorik val yavor, but rather yavor v'al yehorik, aser lo lihorik, he's not allowed to give himself up to. There's no voluntary here. There's no chasidus here. The Rambam goes on to say v'im nerag v'lo avar, he chooses to die rather than eat the vela. And the Rambam calls him a suicide case.
Holy cow.
He's a suicide case. And the Ritva writes that in the case of a married woman who's being forced to have relations with another man at pain of death, the halacha is, so claims the Ritva, I don't think the Rambam would agree with him, but the Ritva claims that the law is she's allowed to submit herself to this Gili Arayis, that's called Karka Olam, also Sugyan Sanhedrin. And if she doesn't do so, he says, Asura lo lihorek. She's not allowed to be killed. She can't let herself be killed. She has to submit herself because of this Svara of Karka Olam. And then on top of that, he quotes the Nuki Yosef in Sanhedrin, who claims that even according to the Ritva, who says she's not allowed to volunteer, and even according to the Rambam, who says you're not allowed to give up your life voluntarily in the case of Yarva Yehoreg, nevertheless, imu adam gadol v'chassid yari shamayim, he's a gadol adar, is rashoy l'kadish Hashem v'limzar atzmo, even I feel a mitzvah kalav
v'tzina. Who says that, Rambam?
This is the Muki Yosef. Right, the Muki Yosef. He says, "Kidei sheyiru ha'am, the world will get out somehow." V'yilmedu yiliras Hashem liavim b'chol avavcham. He's a chassid gadol. He's the gadol adon. So we have basically three shitas over here. You know, on the one extreme, you have the Rambam. He doesn't seem to allow you to even dream of giving up your life when you're not obligated to do so. On the other extreme, you have Tosus, based on the Yushalmi, who says that you can voluntarily give up your life, and you're a great guy. You know, we'll give you brownie points up in Shemayim. You go straight to the good place. You know, you don't have to shovel the coal over there. And then in the middle, we have the Nuki Yosef, who's somewhere mid between, and he says, it's right, you know, your regular rank and false is not allowed to give up his life, and we'll accept the Rambam and the Ritva. But if you are a chassid gadol, so then historically, we could possibly say that according to the Muki Yosef, when we look back at history and we see how many Jews, you know, the Gemara Gittin has these cases of women who jumped into the thing, so you can have, you know, jumped into the water and they committed suicide. I mean, you have these cases throughout history. So we could say, at least according to the Muki Yosef, that maybe they were justified under the law of Chassid Gadol, under Gadol, maybe. Again, I don't know how to, but according to the Rambam, I don't know what to do with Jewish history. Jewish history is replete with cases of people who gave up their lives voluntarily on Kiddush Hashem. And if you look in the Rambam, and if you look in the Kesef Mishnah on the Rambam Perikei, he quotes Rabbi Moshe Kohen, the Ramak, who ballistically argues on the Rambam, and he says, how could the Rambam be right in saying this when so many Jews voluntarily gave up their lives on Kiddush Hashem?
Voluntarily? Aren't these cases of Avodah Zarah? I mean, all these cases of Kiddush Hashem that we've had over the years, they weren't told that eat chazra, I'll kill you. They were told, you kiss the cross, well, I'll kill you.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that even if the guy says to you to eat the veil or I'll kill you,
yeah,
according to Tosus, he can, and it's based on Yerushalmi, he can decide to give up his life.
Yeah,
rather than eating the veil, the Rambam would say he's a suicide.
But the Ramak is talking about, well,
okay, it's very extreme machlokas.
The Ramak argues in the Rambam and says, how can you say that over the ages? We see, what have we seen? We've seen that goyim forced Jews to convert, quote unquote, and they gave their lives. Goyim didn't say we're shy.
I don't have the Rav Moshe Kohen, but I think he quotes other situations from that are not as extreme as Avodah Zarah. Yeah, he's talking about a case where a non-Jewish woman forces him to have relations with her, which is certainly not, does not come under Gilui Arayos. He's talking about cases of people who violated, rather than violate the Issur Yichud. You know, I don't know if he addressed that case explicitly, but this was a case throughout Jewish history where the guy tried to force a Jew to go into a private room with a woman, and people gave up their law. So we're not talking about the big three, you know, as we call them. But I would ask you a different question. I would ask you a question about Avraham Avinu. You know, most poskim, most mafarshim, I should say, see that Avraham Avinu, at least before his milah, had the status of a ben noach. I mean, there was no gerus or anything. You know, if there was gerus, which is the Ramban at the end of Parashas Zemar, it was only at the time of milah. Where is milah taking place? At the end of which parasha, Rabbi Osai? When did Avraham submit himself to milah? Fulfill the mitzvah of milah at the end of Parashas Lech Lecha. When did he give up his life, or was willing to give up his life in the case of Nimrod in the Kibshan Eish? That was at the beginning of Lech Lecha. Maybe even you can turn back to Parashas Noach, because the Parsha at the end of Noach says that they packed out of Ur Kasdan. So why were they packing out? The Torah doesn't tell us. And Chazal tells because they were political enemies, you know, because Nimrod was a state religion, and Nimrod was forcing Avraham Avinu to worship an idol. Now, if the Gemara has in Sanhedrin a question whether a guy has to give up his life on Kiddush Hashem, and the Gemara says the following, this is the final conclusion, Halacha L'maaseh, that a ben Noach was given 7 mitzvahs and not 8 mitzvahs, he doesn't have to give up his life. That means if one guy puts I'm giving you this case, you can give another case, but let's say one guy puts a gun to another guy's head and says, worship this idol or I'll kill you, then the Halacha is the guy who's being forced will worship the idol. There's no chiyuv of Kiddush Hashem. And the question is, if that be the case, then how did Avraham Avinu submit himself as a ben Noach before milah to die al Kiddush Hashem rather than worship the idol? Ella, what, you're going to tell me that Avraham Avinu was such a great chassid that he would volunteer to give up his life even when he doesn't have to do so? So I once had a long discussion about this with my friend Rabbi Ilson, Rabbi Chaim Ilson, and we came to the conclusion that even those who argue with the Rambam, and even those who would grant that you can voluntarily give up your life on Kiddush Hashem, that's only because you have the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. A guy, Lomi Boy, according to the Rambam, who says that even a Jew cannot volunteer to give up his life because he's Ma'avid Atzmo L'Das. But even according to Shaar Rishonim, who say that you're allowed to give up your life on Kiddush Hashem voluntarily, that's only as far as a Jew is concerned, because a Jew has a kiyum mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. So that kiyum mitzvah, even when it's not a chiyuv, will allow him to override v'chaybahem because of the kiyum of Kiddush Hashem. But a guy, a ben Noach, everyone agreed to the Rambam's opinion that he doesn't have a right to give himself up because he doesn't have Kiddush Hashem. He's completely mufka for the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. So the parsha of Avraham Avinu in Nimrod, which was, by the way, deliberately left out of the Torah, there's some sort of remez kal, you know, if you, it's all Torah Shebaal Peh, it's all Midrashim, is a very problematic medrash, because we're brought up to, you know, this is part of our childhood. In fact, in Pirkei Der Blitz, it says that Avram was tested 10 times. And it says Avram Avinu, says the Reb Chaim Valojin, you know, the first Rosh Yeshiva Valojin, he says in his Pirish Ruach Chaim that the reason why it says Avram Avinu is because the capacity of a Jew to give up his life on Kiddush Hashem is something inherited from our father Abraham. It's in the DNA. Well, you've got to believe, therefore, that Avraham Avinu was doing a great thing, you know. But how do you square that with the fact that a Ben Noach is not obligated in Kiddush Hashem? The Rambam holds, if you're not obligated in Kiddush Hashem, you're not allowed to offer yourself for Kiddush Hashem.
Yeah, Rashi says Avraham was king of Kol HaMitzvos, called him Shemit.
Okay, but that would be after something. That would be after Mila, not before Mila. In fact, there's a whole sukkah in Sanhedrin about whether a guy is allowed to do mitzvahs voluntarily.
Is there?
It's not so simple. That's why I would submit to you that the Chazal about Avram fulfilling the mitzvahs, which is based on apostolic parashas by Yera, that's after Lech Lecha, right? So that parasha and that historical event of Avram Avinu fulfilling the mitzvahs of Torah, that's after the Mila. The Ramban says at the end of parashas Emor that after the mitzvah of Mila, Avram Avinu is begeru b'goy lo yischashiv. He leaves the status of a goy and he takes on a new status. Does anybody know who wrote an entire book? I'm not talking about a contemporary of us. This is not, you know, whatever. It's not for the internet. Okay. Who wrote an entire sefer on the status of Avram Avinu? Anybody else? What is the status of Avram Avinu? Somebody dedicated an entire sefer to this. Do you heard of the Mishnah Melech on the Rambam? His name is Rosnas. He was a Spanish Jew. So he wrote an entire book called Parshas Drachim, the Mishnah Melech, on this issue. What's the status of Avraham
Avinu? On this Midrash?
No, not on this Midrash. You know, he touches on this Midrash at great length, but it's a whole sefer. You know, what was Avraham Avinu? Like Avi says, like Chazal says, Makayim Kol Tarkula, even Erev Tav Shilin. I mean, how could it be if he had a status of Ben Noach? And these are all. But he goes beyond that. He doesn't limit himself to discussing Avraham Avinu. He speaks about all the avos. Chazal say that Bas Paro, Bati Bas Paro, what was she doing at the Nile? So Chazal says she was going into the mikvah for Gerus. The question is, the Gemara in Krisa says that Gerus only came into existence at the time of Matan Torah. So that's also problematic. But what was the status of the avos? Okay, that's a deep question.
One thing, is there a different idea of shogeg and meizin by Hashem and Mitzvah?
Yeah, there is. Okay. But it depends what kind of shogeg you're talking about. In other words, if a guy, you know, slips on a banana peel, that's one kind of shogeg. If he says Omer Mutter, he claims that he doesn't know the law, which is another type of shogeg that works in Yisrael, but it doesn't work in a Ben Noach.
So if somebody is being forced, the guy is being forced something, that's never been a shogeg.
Yeah, but no, that would only be in a case where he physically makes the decision to do it. You know, if somebody's forcing him, that's called onus.
Okay.
So Rabbi said, let's go back to our Mishnah. So the Mishnah is talking about Ubra Sheiricha, and if you learn the Rashi, you know whose life is in danger. I give you three possibilities. Look at the Rashi. Is it the fetus's life is in danger, the mother's life in danger, or both lives are in danger?
Both.
Yeah, Rashi says both lives in danger, right? Rashi says that Shneim Misukon, correct? Shneim Misukon. So the Achronim here go to town with this Rashi, and they assume that Rashi wants to emphasize that not only is the Uber's life in jeopardy, but even the mother's life is in jeopardy. And Rashi means to convey to us that only if the, in addition to the Ubar, the mother's life is threatened, then we can feed her and violate Yom Kippur, but to feed her for the sake of the Ubar, that we cannot do. And in fact, the Ramban, in his Torah Sa'adam, and the Rush here in the 8th Perek of Yuma, both quote Rishonim that of the opinion that for the sake of saving the Ubar, we cannot violate Shabbos, we cannot violate Yom Kippur. The Ramban says it's wrong. And the Ramban has a sugya in Erchin, we won't go into it now, and he claims that it's Lehejah in the Gemara in Erchin, that you will violate Yom Kippur, violate the Shabbos for the sake of an oop. But nevertheless, Rashi here and other Rishonim quoted by the Ramban in the Rosh maintain that for the sake of the Ubar, we do not apply the principle of Pikuach Nefesh. So let me submit to you the following principle. And again, maybe this premise is wrong, but just as a sort of like a working premise for the rest, you know, for the next few minutes of that discussion. According to those Rishonim, that you do not violate Yom Kippur in order to save the life of the Ubar, and the rule, the overriding rule of the Chaybahem of Pikuach Nefesh does not apply, we're going to have to assume, again, we can debate this point, but just for our purposes, we're going to assume that an Uber is not called a Nefesh. And therefore, Pikuach Nefesh doesn't apply for the sake of the Uber. And this leads me to the following question. If an Uber is not a Nefesh, then to save the mother's life in a case where the birth process is endangering the mother's life, which would mean that the only option to save the mother's life would be to kill the Ubar. So when I put these two on a scale, you know, you have the mother and you have the fetus, then the halacha should clearly be that we save the mother at the expense of the Ubar, because the mother is a Nefesh, clearly the Ubar is not a Nefesh. But on the page that I gave you today, if you open up to the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Gemara is not very clear about this point. And the Gemara says that Esvei Rav Chisda Rav Huna. Rav Huna had made a statement that even a katan is called a rodef. And Rav Chisda said that if that be the case, if Rav Huna you are right, then we should apply the principle of a rodev to the case of an ubar. And in fact, the Mishnah in Masechta Olos says ein dochin nefesh mipnei nefesh, that at least once the ubar pops its head out, or rov, padachto, whatever the case may be, then we have to let the birth process take its natural course, and we cannot kill the ubar to save the mother, because we apply the principle of ein dochin nefesh mipnei nefesh. But the premise of Rav Chisda's question is that the ubar is called a rodef, and we kill the ubar under the law of a rodef in order to save the mother. Mashma, it would seem from Rav Chisda, and we'll see the Gemara's answer in a minute, that if not for the law of Rodev, what would be the status of the Ubar? Can we be Doche the Ubar in order to save the mother? Are you with me on this? Again, Rav Chisda says that we should really be killing the Ubar in order to save the mother, according to Rav Huna. Why? Because Rav Huna says that there's no minimum age, you know, to be a candidate and to be accepted into the Rodev club. So you are considered a Rodev despite, you know, the immaturity of your age, the youth of your age. And Rav Chisda wants to apply that even to an Ubar. And therefore Rav Huna says we should be able to kill the Ubar under the law of what? Of Rodev. You get the impression from Rav Chisda's question, again, I didn't get up to Rav Huna's answer, that we should be killing the Ubar under the law of Rodef. I would have suggested something totally different. Let's kill the Ubar, at least according to one school of thought in the Rishonim, under the rule that an Ubar is not an Efesh. If an Uber is not a Nefesh to be Dochi Yom Kippur, and we're only going to violate Yom Kippur for the sake of the mother, because the mother is a Nefesh and the Uber is not, then why would we even hesitate? Why does the Gemara have to analyze the question of killing the Uber to save the mother from the perspective of Rodev? Meaning the whole sugi revolves around the issue of whether or not the Uber can be called a Rodev or cannot be called a Rodev. And Rav Chisda assumes that the Uber is a Rodev. And then and only then can we be docha the nefesh or ubar in order to save the mother. Forget about that. I don't see why you have to analyze the question of the ubar under the law of rodev and rack your brains as to whether the ubar is a rodev, is not a rodev. Forget that. Just drop it. Why not just say the following? The Ubar is not an Nefesh. We won't violate Yom Kippur to save the Ubar. The law of Pikuach Nefesh doesn't apply. So if the Ubar is not a Nefesh, then clearly in the decision-making process here between the life of the mother and the life of the Ubar, we have to tip the scale in favor of the mother, because the mother is clearly a Nefesh, and the Ubar, at least according to these Rishonim, is not a Nefesh. And by the way, you might think that this is all theoretical because Rav Chisda's question is rejected, but let's open up the Rambam. The Rambam says in Hilchas Rotzeach that when it comes to a Rodev, we have a mitzvah to kill the Rodev, to save the Nirdov. And not only that, we have a losaseh, lolochus al nefesh harodev. We can't be compassionate with regard to the Rodev. We absolutely must kill the Rodev. Even though if you look at the Gemara here, Pei Beis Amud Aleph, one line up before the end of the daf, it says Nitan Latzilo Benafsh. It's a strange language here, but the Rambam nevertheless reinterprets that Gemara, and instead of Nitan Latzilo Benafsh, it means Chayav Latzilo Benafsh, because you have to be Matzil or Nirdov by killing the Rodev. And therefore, says the Rambam, Lefichach, how do we apply the principle of Rodev? Horu Chachomim Sheubra Shimakasha Leleid, this pregnant woman is having trouble in labor. Is muta lachtocha ubar b'me'eha? You can destroy the life of the ubar in order to save the mother, but why? Clearly, because of the halach of what, Rabosai? Nobody's following with me? Did you prepare this? I guess you didn't get a chance. So let's prepare it now. If you didn't get a chance, you didn't have the time, Poshim. Or what?
No, we did.
So why am I getting total silence?
No.
Again, you're distracted. Try to.
I have to stand up.
Okay, so try to focus you. We're old friends, so we speak a different language.
It's the 50 and over crowd.
Yeah, right. I can't accept that, Elio. That's self-incriminating, you know. I'm a divorced crowd, you know, 60 and over, you know. So what I'm asking is the following. When you kill the Uber to save the mother, what halacha justifies that? Look in the Rambam. The Rambam is very clear. He presents the law of Rodev. It's a mitzvah saseh, and it's a lo saseh lo lochus al rechav. You know, there's no compassion for the Rodev. We must kill the Rodev and save the Nirda. Says the Rambam, lefichach. Let's underline that word, lefichach. Horu chachamim, that we kill the Uber to save the mother. Under what law are we killing the Uber to save the mother? Under the law of Rodev. Is that not clear? And then he adds the phrase, and why, says the Rambam? Mipnei shehu kirodev acharei l'hargo. Again, he's not really there's no intention on his part. He's not deliberately trying to kill his mother. You know, he would love to have a mother to raise him and to coddle him and so forth. But you know, he has the same din as a rodev. Again, if the Rambam held that we're killing the Ubar because the Ubar lacks a status of a Nefesh, why did the Rambam put it here? This is not the place. The Rambam is very careful. We call it, you know, Rambam geography. The location, the way the Rambam, the place the Rambam decides to codify this halacha here in Hilchas Rodev is very deliberate on the Rambam's part. Reb Chaim in his Sefer is going to go, he's going to go ballistic over this Rambam. Okay, call the Uber a Rodev, fine. But then the Rambam goes on to say that im hotzias rosho ein nogim bo. We can't kill the Uber after it pops its head out. So frekter Reb Chaim, but what happened to the halach of Rodev? And this is going to bother Reb Chaim's mind for this entire piece, you know, which is like a PhD thesis here. He probably deserves a PhD just for this piece alone. It's one of hundreds of pieces. But anyway, so Reb Chaim wants to know, why does the Rambam allow it, killing the Ubar before it pops its head out under the law of Rodev, but after it pops its head out, it's no longer considered a Rodev? That boggles the mind. But be that as it may, the Rambam does assume that there is halacha of Rode fear in order to allow us to kill the Nirdof. I'm going to just read, if you have the part that I underlined here on the second page, okay, yeah. I mean, I have the Reb Chaim inside, so I'm going to read it from Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim says that he says the ode to be Yoshval Amasha Rimavur be Erchid of Zion Dahavi Gufa Achrina Vinigmar Chiyuso be Ampenafsha and Vusham Ode Machalam is a Shabbos. Okay, it doesn't matter where I am. All I'm saying is that that Reb Chaim quotes a Sugyan Erchin and he says that he doesn't understand what we're talking about over here, because the Ubar is enough. Again, he's a proponent of that sheet of the Rishonim, that for the sake of the Ubar we could be Mechalel Es HaShabbos. And why is that? Says Reb Chaim, is Hareu Bechlal V'chai Bohem U'Pikuach Nefesh Docha Kol HaTorah Kula. Now, Reb Chaim's logic is the following. Are we going to violate the Shabbos for the sake of saving the Ubar? So he has a Gemara in Erchin, which clearly indicates that we will do so. We will be Mechal Shabbos for the sake of the Ubar. Says Reb Chaim, if that be the case, it's clear from the Sugya in Erchin, and this is the same Sugya that the Ramban refers to in his Torah Sa'adam, to prove that we'll violate Yom Kippur for the sake of the Ubar. Says Reb Chaim, who bechlal v'chai v'em pikuch nefesh doche kol ha-Torah kula. Correct? So in other words, Reb Chaim is saying that if he's bechlal pikuch nefesh, I emphasize the word nefesh, he has a nefesh, this Ubar, and if we docha call it Torah Kula in the case of pikuch nefesh, umim mele, says Reb Chaim, di eino nidche mipnei pikuch nefesh ta'cherim, right? Once I include you under nefesh, as far as pikuch nefesh, then you have rights to the Chaybahem no less than someone else. We can't snub you out to save another nefesh. So it's your Mechaibahem against another Mechaibahem. This is going to justify why the Rambam needs what in order to allow you to kill the Uber to save the mother? Rodev, right? In other words, again, says Reb Chaim, if you suspend the law of Rodev with regard to the Uber, you're in deep trouble. You can't just say, let's kill the Uber to save the mother. You can't say that. The Uber also has rights to Mechaibahem. I'm using that word, you know, loosely. He also has privileges to a claim to life. His claim to life, this Uber, I use the word his, it might be a girl, it doesn't matter, is no less important in the eyes of the halacha than the mother's claim of life. So how can you snub out the Uber to save the mother? And in order to prove that the Ubar is a nefesh, and he's included on the Mechaibahem, Reb Chaim quotes a sugya in Erechin, the maskanas sugya is that we will be Mechal Shabbos for the sake of the Ubar. Says Reb Chaim, if that be the case, the Ubar is included in the status of nefesh in Mechaibahem. No. If the Kuch nefesh applies to the Ubar, that means that he's a nefesh. Says Reb Chaim, the Rambam had a problem. Because the Mishnah in Olos establishes that we will kill the Ubar in order to save the mother. How can you be doche one nefesh for the sake of another nefesh? We don't have the ability to do so. I mean, again, the Shevi Alta say, you know, you can say let nation take, let destiny, you know, play out, play its, take its course. And if I don't do anything, like Tosis has that case where they're going to throw you onto the baby, but I'm not doing anything actively to kill the baby, fine. That's okay, but here we're going to cut up the Ubar. Rabbanu Shalom. It's a tragic situation. And why are we doing this? To save the mother. Now what happened to the nefesh of the Ubar? The Ubar is about to be born. We're going to cut it up. Why? Save the mother. Who asked this question according to Reb Chaim? Who was bothered by this question? The Rambam. And what was the Rambam's resolution with this problem? Rodev. The Rambam felt compelled to invoke the halach of Rodev to justify how can we kill this nefesh, meaning the Ubar, in order to save the mother. Again, then Reb Chaim is going to turn around and ask us the question, well, if that be the case, then even after the Ubar pops his head out, he still should retain his status as an Ubar, as a Rodev. I mean, my talk of shame Rodev, you know, be laid us ho, and therefore we should maintain the halacha of killing the Ubar to save the mother on the law of Rodev. And that's where Reb Chaim is going to spend the balance of this PhD thesis in order to somehow justify how we can kill, how we can let nature take its course and let the mother die in the case. With, you know, people say, and it's a real mistake, they say that you know, there's another religion. I'm not talking about Islam. So you figure out which religion that has a fundamentally different approach to this whole issue of who we save. And they believe that we kill the mother to save the Uba. Well, the truth is that even Judaism accepts that. We will kill the mother, so to speak, in order to save the Uber. But only when the Uber pops its head out. So again, you know, I was brought up with this, you know, when they try to show you how our religion is different than theirs, you know, they quote this case. That's an oversimplification by far. The halacha does say that to a certain extent, the Uber is going to live and the mother's going to die. But only when the birth process has begun. Again, it's not completed itself, or a doctor, or whatever the lawyer is.
So it's still considered a fetus while it's inside.
But you see, Elio, I would have said that. You would have said it. The Rambam doesn't say it. The Rambam is unwilling to say that the baby is a fetus. And as such, it doesn't cut the mustard. It's not a nefesh. It hasn't crossed the boundary. That's what I would have said. But the Rambam doesn't say that. The Rambam calls it a rodev. And Reb Chaim says the Rambam was forced to accept that position. Because without rodev, this premise that the uber is not a nefesh is absolutely incorrect. If the uber was not a nefesh, then the sugya in Erechin makes no sense. The sugya in Erechin says that we're being machal Shabbos of the Lord because of nefesh for the uber. The nefesh of the uber is a nefesh. If it's a nefesh as far as because nefesh is concerned to override the Shabbos, then it's a nefesh as far as the halacha of ein doche nefesh b'nei nefesh. As we said before, it has rights to live, and we're not going to be doche the nefesh of the uber, even for the sake of the nefesh of the bala. And therefore, the Rambam was so bothered by this that he had to come up with this halacha of rodef. And that's the only way we could justify killing the uber.
How do we equate the nefesh of the uber to the nefesh of the mother? Why do we wait 30 days to do a pigeon up in? To rule out whether the baby is a suffix nafe or not.
Right.
So right now, this baby has a different status for the first 30 days.
It's true.
It's of some kind of Suffolk navel hidden in
right.
the
You're
buried
right.
in the corner someplace.
You're right. I don't know if you know. Maybe you could invoke the principle of ein Suffolk motzi midei vada. But that's also complicated because I'm not sure what the mother's status is at this point. You know, I'm not 100% sure that the mother's going to survive this. But you know what, Avi? Hold on to your question. Your question is better than my answer. It's very complicated here. But if we're following in the Rambam's footsteps here, and the Rambam says that ein doche nefesh mei nefesh should apply to the uber, and therefore once the uber pops its head out, then again, still, Avi, as you say, even if the uber popped its head out, it still is not, you know, out of suffix, you know. It still is suffix chai. Nevertheless, we're going to allow the birth process to take its course, even with full knowledge that the mother's going to die as a result. So you do see that ein doche nefesh b'nei nefesh is applicable here. We see it in the Mishnah in Olos, we see it in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, we see it in the Rambam Hilchos Rotzeach. It's straight across the board. Ein doche nefesh b'nei nefesh, even though the uber may live, may not live. You know, it's a suffix nefel in the whole bit. And we wait, like you say, pigeon up at 32. So it means that as far as Hilchas ein doche nefesh nei nefesh, despite the suffix, how many babies don't make it to the age of 30, we still give the baby a chazak. It's going to live. And based on that chazak, we're going to let the mother die, because we're going to apply the principle ein doche nefesh nei nefesh. Reb Chaim went a step further in the Rambam, and he said that halacha of ein doche nefesh nei nefesh applies even before the fetus pops its head out. Haraya, what was Reb Chaim's proof? What compelled Reb Chaim to say that even the fetus has halacha of a nefesh, as far as ein doche nefesh nei nefesh? The fact that the Gemara in Erechin establishes that we will violate the Shabbos, the Nisa Skila, for the sake of saving the Ubar, it hasn't popped its head out. Under the law, because nefesh, says Reb Chaim, by studies, you see that the Ubar is a nefesh. If it's a nefesh, says Reb Chaim, we're going to activate the principle of what? Ein dochin nefesh vei nefesh. And then we have to rack up brains and come up with some explanation to justify killing the Uber to save the mother. What happened to Ein dochin nefesh vei nefesh? And the only answer the Rambam can come up with was Rodin. Which, by the way, is not a terrible answer, because Rav Chisda, as we saw, at least in his attack against Rav Huna was the one who said, Kadna Rodin Bakar Chadveir Largo, is he gets the law of Rodin. So Rav Chisda applied that even to the Ubar. So we see very clearly that Rav Chisda, at least, was operating with the premise that the Ubar is a Rodev, so it's not terrible, I'll be right with you, if the Rambam classifies the Ubar as a Rodev.
I'm not asking to reply, but it just kind of bothers me. Perhaps he's not really Nefesh, but he's an Aver. And to save an Aver on Shabbos, is that called that?
Not really, unless that Aver threatens the life of the person. You know, if I know for sure that the Aver doesn't threaten the life of the person, then there are situations in which Sakonis Aver is considered Pikuach Nefesh, and there are situations where they're not, you know. In fact, we're going to have a whole discussion, if we have time for it, next week, not for today, if you're interested, this is voluntary. What happens if I can wait till after Shabbos to offer medical assistance to a person and know that the person will survive? Now the person is a safe sakana. Why not push off the violation of Shabbos until after Shabbos? And this becomes a very complicated business. The Rambam says that if the medical treatment will require a minimum of 8 days, that's the Rambam, and therefore we're going to violate one Shabbos willy-nilly, we have no choice. But the question is about the second Shabbos, and we can postpone the violation of the Shabbos till after Shabbos, and then the 8-day period will start on Sunday, so you'll only violate one Shabbos. The Rambam says violate two Shabbos, don't postpone the medical treatment. So it's only a case where, let's say, the medical treatment will require, let's say, 6 days. Then, if there's no jeopardy to the life of the patient, the Rambam says we'll wait till after Shabbos to violate the Shabbos. But if we know that the minimum amount of medical treatment is 8 days, okay, I'm really getting off of
it. Okay.
Anyway, let's get back to our issue.
Yeah, who's actually one question?
Yeah, okay.
On the subject, directly.
Yeah.
If we're going with the Derek right now, that we're going with Rode, that the Uber is a Rode.
And A, the Uber is a Nefesh, and B, the Uber is a Rode.
Nefesh and he's a Rode. Okay. Now, Yitzur, the main purpose of this whole discussion is, who's the Rode, who's the Nirda? What happens, Yitzur, there's a case, let's say there's a blood incompatibility, so that the mother develops this antibody or whatever it is, and it's killing the Uber. Now, all of a sudden, now the mother is the Rode, and the Uber is the near death. Would you say, would the Rambam say that if necessary we kill the mother to save the Uber, because the Uber is the near death?
Well, yeah, I'm not asking for you, but again, according to the logic that's here,
like
it sounds like you.
Okay.
But again, Rabbi said, I want to focus your attention on this machlokas. Let's review. There's a machlokas whether or not we violate Yom Kippur for the sake of the Uber. And those Rishonim who say that we do, just simply, the only life that's exclusively in danger is the Uber's life and not the mother's life, those Rishonim say we will violate Yom Kippur. They have a Sugyan Erechin. We saw Rabbi Chaim quoting the Sugyan Erechin, which is explicit that we will violate the Shabbos and certainly Yom Kippur for the sake of the life of the Uber. And yet, there's a whole school of Rishonim who say that we cannot violate Yom Kippur for the sake of the Uber. Now, let's shift. Let's make a paradigm shift here. Let's put on our thinking caps and assume, which I claim is Rashi's shita, and it's not just me, but Rashi says that in our Mishnah with the Uber Sheiricha, both are in danger. It's not enough to say the Uber's life is in danger. Because for the Uber alone, exclusively, we will not override Yom Kippur. What conclusion do you derive from that shita then, according to Reb Chaim's whole structure? That an Uber is not a nefesh. If an Uber is not a Nefesh, forget the law of Rodev. And we have a very simple way of understanding why we kill the Uber to save the mother, and that is because the Uber is not a Nefesh. I don't have to rack my brains here, figure out A, why is the Uber a Rodev? And B, if the Uber is a Rodev, why does the Uber drop its status as the Rodev when it pops its head out? Forget Dalmi Hakmi. Let's just obviate that whole thing. And the truth is that even after the Uber pops its head out, there's no din of Rodef. Because if you go back to the Gemara says in that very same line in Sanhedrin Ayin Beis, why do we let the birth process take its course, even though the mother's gonna die? The Gemara says, Shani Hosim to Mishmaya Korat Filin. That doesn't come under the Loch of Rodef. Which means that Katna Rodef Achachaver Lahargo is considered a Rodef. There's a Maisa Radifa. And that act of Radifa gives the status of a Katan, even though he's not responsible for his actions, a status of a Rodef. But in the case of the Ubar, where there's a birth process and the child is being thrust, there's no Maisa Radifa. In that case, there's no Halach of Rodef. So let's just suspend the Halach of Rodef, neutralize it as far as the Uber is concerned. It doesn't apply to the Uber. Now, if the Uber is not a Rodef, then ask yourself the question, why does the Mishnah in Olos say the following? If the Uber has not yet popped its head out, we kill the Uber. Once the Uber pops its head out, we let the mother die and let the birth process take its course. What's the difference between before it pops its head out and after it pops its head out? And what's the answer of Osai? Before it pops its head out, it's not an Efesh. And again, we're going according to those Rishonim, it's very smooth, who maintain that we did not violate Yom Kippur to save the Uber. Notice the law of Pikuach Nefesh is suspended with regard to the Uber. The Uber is not an Efesh. If the male, if the Uber is not an Efesh, as long as it hasn't popped its head out, we will allow to kill the killing of the Ubar, who's not an Efesh, for the sake of the mother, who is an Efesh. But once it pops its head out, we can no longer do that, because to intervene at this point would be an act of Ritzicha, because the Uber has the halach of Nefesh. Again, now Avi would ask, I know if I'm reading your mind, would we kill someone who killed an Uber? So the answer to that question, I believe, but it's not for now, so don't jump on me. It depends who that person is. Is he a Jew or a non-Jew? If that Jew is killing a fetus in its mother's womb, I would certainly say that it's chayav misa. Because the law of an Uber, as far as Ben Noach is concerned, has the status of a nefesh. In the case of Yisrael, it's a violation, but I would not put him to death. And even if a Jewish physician were to put to death an Uber after it's popped its head out, I doubt if we would put that physician to death. Because of the strange status of an Uber until, even after birth, as far as proving its viability. But that's irrelevant to our discussion, because our discussion is whether or not he has the status of a nefesh. For sure, once it pops its head out, we will violate the Shabbos Lekuli Alma to save the Uber, because the Uber is now a Yelud. After Leda takes place, it has the status of a live being, and therefore we will violate Yom Kippur for the sake of the Uber after it pops its head out. And therefore, if it has the status of a nefesh as far as Pikuach Nefesh is concerned, then likewise it has the status of a nefesh as far as the principle of Ein Dochin Nefesh, b'pnei nefesh. We have to let the birth process take its course, and if need be, the mother will die, the Uber will live. Good? So far, so good. What do you say? Okay, you want to discuss that now? But that'll be the end of the shiur. Okay. If you're interested, Mitch, I discussed this yesterday in the shiur that I gave to replace, you know, her advice till tomorrow, so that you could hear that shiur. It's not yet online, but we'll put it online for you, and I'll send you a link. Okay. But for the balance of the shiur, I want to present to you something in Reb Chaim that I thought was amazing. If you go back to the same section in Reb Chaim, Reb Chaim says the following. He says, Yesh Lomar, it's a little bit earlier on the page, if you're following, than the lines we read from the Gemara in Erechin, a few lines up. He says, the Afal Gav Dechol Zman Shelo Nolad, even though, as long as the Uber has not popped its head out, Velo Nigmar Chiyuso, Eino Doche Esha Isurim. Okay, so he's telling you now that the life of the fetus does not come under the halacha of pikuach nefesh. We will not violate Yom Kippur Shabbos for the sake of the Uber, as long as it hasn't been born yet. Notice he's now waving the flag of those Rishonim, like Rashi, the way we daik Rashi, that the Uber is not included in pikuach nefesh. Avol kol zeh le'inyan lidchos es ha'isur. He does not have the status of a nefesh, as far as pikuach nefesh, to override isur. But to kill him, this is what we call in Yiddish what? Tzeidinim, right? This is Tzeidinim, right? This is a classical case of Tzeidinim. In other words, answer the question, Shalom. Is this Uber a Nefesh or is he not a Nefesh? What's the answer?
Yeah.
It depends, exactly. The theory of relativity, right? What Einstein did to science is what Reb Chaim did to Lumbus. Everything is relative. Does he have the status of a Nefesh? Does he not have the status of a Nefesh? And the answer is antithetical. He does have the status of a Nefesh, but he doesn't have the status of a Nefesh all at the same time. How can you say A and not A at the same time? They can't coexist. The answer is the standard of being docha isurim, to be called a nefesh, to join the nefesh club, membership in that club requires a very high standard, and the Uber just doesn't cut the mustard. He's not a nefesh to be docha isurim. But ask me the question, does the Uber have cling to the status of nefesh to protect his life, even if it means ein docha nefesh acher? Says Reb Chaim, yes, he is a nefesh. Only Reb Chaim can get away with this. And therefore, even if I grant you, even if I would grant you that the Rambam holds like Rashi, meaning the Rambam would agree that we cannot violate Shabbos or Yom Kippur for the sake of an Uber, because an Uber is not b'chal pikuach nefesh, the Rambam still had a problem. How can we kill the Uber? The Uber does have a status of nefesh as far as ein docha nefesh mei nefesh. Rabbosai, to understand this line in Reb Chaim would probably take a lifetime of philosophical inquiry to figure out, Ribbono shel Olam, as far as the, you know, the scales or the, you know, the seesaw of violating the Torah law, and in case of Shabbos, in case of Yom Kippur, on a very severe Torah law, for the sake of saving Hatzolus Nefesh, because Nefesh, the Uber just doesn't make it. As far as the Uber's own right to claim Nefesh, such that it incurs the shvichas domim, if you want to be docha that nefesh, even for the sake of another nefesh, is v'chai b'hem kiks. Very paradoxical. And here I want to tell you, I have an edition, a new edition of Reb Chaim. Again, it's old already, but it was in its time, it was new, because this edition of Reb Chaim has in the back the comments of the Chazon Ish. Just one historical tidbit, you know, that I like to add, tidbit, is that the Chazon Ish's ha'oros, his critique of Reb Chaim, were his own personal notes on the gillion of his copy of Reb Chaim. I would pay $1 million to own the Chazon Ish's copy of Reb Chaim. It was not meant for publication. Somebody went ahead, I don't know how they did it, and they published it. It's all here in the back. The Chazon Ish says the following. He says, even if the Uber is Doche Isurim like Shabbos and Yom Kippur, Mikomakom le'inyan hatzolas nefesh, Dochen es nafsho, lahatzil es nefesh. This is what we call in Yiddish, punkfaket, the exact opposite of Reb Chaim. Whereas Reb Chaim wants to tell you that you can't be Doche Shabbos for the sake of an Uber, but certainly, clearly, the Uber has rights to a nefesh and can't be Doche his nefesh for the sake of another nefesh. The Chazon Ish says just the opposite. Even if I maintain that you could be Docha Shabbos and Docha Yom Kippur for the sake of the Uber, he's included on the Bikuach Nefesh, that's the Bidocha Yisurin. But relative to another nefesh, I do not apply the principle of Ein Docha. I suspend the principle of Ein Docha Nefesh Ben Nefesh. I have the rights, nay, the obligation to be Docha Ben Nefesh Uber for the sake of a nefesh go.
You're saying against
Reb Chaim? Against Reb Chaim. Yeah. The Chazon Ish against Reb Chaim, you know, like Al, you're surprised. The Chazon Ish disagrees with Reb Chaim about, I don't know if I'd be exaggerating if I said maybe 200 times in these gilyonos. So, but Ali, can you say over the machlokas between Reb Chaim and the Chazon Ish? You know, the Rav Zichron Brach used to say at the end of the shiur, he used to try to see if anyone understood the shiur. So he'd call on someone and say, can you say over the shiur? And the poor guy that got called on. So once he called on Schwartz, so Schwartz was very nervous. So he got up and he said, Schwartz didn't come today. He says, all right, you give me the answer.
This machlokas is only because till you read the other half of the Reb Chaim. It only seems like a machlokas until you read the second half of the Reb Chaim, because the Reb Chaim says in the second half that the din is all springs from the near death. the chiyuv to save the near death.
So you know what, Al? Let's talk about this after the shiur because we're mamish already over time. But I just want again, you know, instead of asking one of you guys to say over the shiur, I'll say over the shiur. No, just this last point. Just this last point. I want everyone to walk out of this. At least Chach, this way I want you to walk out. Reb Chaim understands that even if I maintain that I will not violate, we'll call it Shitas Rashi, I'll call it Shitas Rashi, that we cannot override the Shabbos or Yom Kippur for the sake of an Ubar, he's not included in Pikuach Nefesh, he doesn't have that power. Nevertheless, Ein Dochen Nefesh Nei Nefesh applies to the Ubar, he is considered a Nefesh. The Chazon Ish says just the opposite. The Chazon Ish says that even if I maintain that I will violate Shabbos and Yom Kippur for the sake of an Ubar, as far as Havera is concerned, to be Dochen Havera, he is considered a Nefesh. Nevertheless, if you compare his Nefesh to the Nefesh of the mother, he's a Nefesh Eino Gomer, and the law of Ein Dochen Nefesh Eino Nefesh does not apply to the Ubar. Fascinating, no?
Okay.
Yeah, call. Yeah,
call.
Yeah. Okay, now, Al, we can talk about the rest of the time. I just wanted to get,
yeah, the second,
you know, get to this.
They use different lashon. They use a different, a little different svara, but it comes out the same way. Because what he says is, Enochinami, you wouldn't be able to be Daichen Nefesh, which is the definition of Nefesh by the Uber. But because that's your goal, you're going with the din of the chiyuv of Hatzolus Nefasha is general.
General. Universal.
Right. But this is a separate din in saving the nirdav. Saving the nirdav is a mitzvah bifnei atzma. It's a mitzvah saseh according to Reb Chaim. And because of that, what's generated is, how do you save the nirdav? Well, it may require that you kill the rode. But that's not, then you don't apply about...
Then you kill a rode for as a shame rode for that a chiyuv rode. Even this fetus will...
His name rode only generates because there's a nirdav. If there's no nirdav, there's no rode.
No, but I just want to add one point to what you're saying, Alan, because I think this is Reb Chaim's main point.
Yeah.
Reb Chaim's saying that in this reality in which the life of the mother is being endangered by, shall we say, the birth of the child, of the fetus, the fetus gets what Reb Chaim calls a shame rodef. In other words, now we have this reality, we have this scenario which is called a rodef and a nirdaf.
Yeah.
She now has the status of a nirdaf because the fetus is
correct,
the rodef. And now new dinim of Hatzolus Nefashos is kicking.
It's not Hatzolus Nefashos.
Can you get by that?
It's not Hatzolus, because I think Reb Chaim is saying under Hatzolus Nefashos, we run into the wall, the brick we run, or we run into
right.
But there's a new halacha
that tells me to kill the road
out of the arena. There's no weighing nefesh
so I'm just curious, Al. I mean, again, we can analyze this. This is a Reb Chaim that's very profound, but what does it have to do with my discussion?
No, what I'm saying is, because at the end of the day, what happens is Reb Chaim would say the same thing. Where Chazon Ish said that he doesn't have a din, that his din of nefesh is minor compared to the mother's din of nefesh. Isn't that what you said?
No, the Chazon Ish would say that even without the din of Rode.
Yeah,
Reb Chaim is saying it only with the din of Rode, with the separate din of Hatzolus Hanir.
Right. But according to the Chazon Ish, you'd say that he has a din of Nefesh, but he only has a din of Nefesh
She'eino Gomer.
That's right.
And that's that's irrelevant to the Parsha of Rode.
Yes.
Reb Chaim is not going to tolerate
it.
Reb Chaim is going to say that this fetus. Has the status of a nefesh, even if I can't be Docha Shabbos.
That's right. But
he's a nefesh. And ain't Docha Nefesh.
The din of Nirda, he forfeits his life.
Right. So that was the point that I wasn't going into the, you know, how Reb Chaim is going to resolve the contradiction in the Rambam between the Reish and the Sefer. You know, once it pops his head off, all of a sudden, where does the din of Rodef dissipate? I was just focused on this one Nakud in Reb Chaim, which I found, shall I say, mind-boggling. That Reb Chaim understood in his logic, in Reb Chaim's mind, if we could take a, you know, if we could do a study of Reb Chaim's mind, the nituach of his mind, Reb Chaim understood that even if I can't be Docha Shabbos,
right,
the Ubar has rights to life that don't fall short of her, the mother's life, rights to life. Exactly. They're equal until you get to Rode.
Until you get to Rode.
That was my point. So again, leave out Rode for a minute. Leave out Rode, because my point is totally irrelevant to Rode. Because I was studying the sugya in Yuma, I wasn't studying the sugya in Sanhedrin. I only brought the sugya in Sanhedrin of Rode in order to isolate this nekud of Reb Chaim, in which Reb Chaim says that even though you're not docha isurim, you are not b'chal pikuach nefesh, you, meaning the Ubar, are still on the same par as the mother, as far as the law of nefesh to nefesh. That's where the Chazanish can't tolerate it. The Chazanish gets up and yells, and he says, what are you talking about? You're telling me I can't be docha Shabbos? I'll go even further than that. I'll say you can be docha Shabbos for the sake of the Ubar. But for Desvegan, nevertheless, you will not maintain the life of the Ubar at the expense of an nefesh kovu. It's like minakotza lakotza. Again, even without Rodek, I don't even think we have to, even if you never heard of Rodek, this would be a fascinating
thing. But Reb Chaim doesn't have to come to where there's a shikul hadas of how much is a nefesh, what's a nefesh, is a big nefesh or a little nefesh or whatever. Like, they doesn't come to that altogether, because he has a din of nirda. Once he has a
well, wait a minute, Al, I appreciate and I applaud that you're defending Reb Chaim, but you know, you're being a little bit unfair. Reb Chaim himself has deep trouble here. Why? Because if you're not willing to say a small nefesh versus a larger nefesh, you're going to have two major problems. Problem number one is, why are you machal Shabbos for the sake of the mother and not for the sake of the Ubar? At some point, you're going to have to admit to me, Reb Chaim, that there's something called a nefesh with a capital N, and there's a nefesh with a small N, you know, a small nun. And secondly, Reb Chaim, even in the context of this new halacha called Hatzolos HaNirdah, you yourself have to face the music, Reb Chaim. Within that context, you are admitting that there's a difference between a nefesh gomer and a nefesh eino gomer. And Reb Chaim uses the language nefesh eino gomer. He's not allergic to that language.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying that we would be giving Reb Chaim too much credit, and I think we'd be too superficial in analyzing this Reb Chaim if we said that Reb Chaim is trying to throw out this difference between levels of a nefesh.
He could get away with it. He could get away without it, because with the halach of nirda. But I think Reb Chaim is yoreg to the actual meaning of the Rambam, because the Rambam, if you medayik in the Rambam says very clear his kin reidei. He never says he's a Raide. He never says the Uber's a Raide. He says Kiraide. And Reb Chaim is learning from that.
Kiraide being
Kiraide, he says,
that he has a shame Raide, but not a Chiyu Raide.
But I think Reb Chaim is saying is, what's made Kiraide? What is a Raide? Raide is not a name. Raide is what he's trying to do. What he's doing, the consequence of his being is somebody is going to die because of him. If he's the cause of the death directly, Birtsona, so to speak.
Well, okay. I don't want to say Birtsona. Leave out Birtsona, because get me nervous.
So comes the Rambam and says that the Uber is Kiroidev. What does Kiroidev mean? How is he Kiroidev? Because there's a near-death. There's a near-death all of a sudden. Now I see, I understand. There's a person who's in dangerous life. All of a sudden now, so I have to apply whatever I have to do, the Torah tells you, to save the near-death. Now that's how Reb Chaim comes to the whole concept of near-death, because of the Rambam saying Kiraide. If he said Raide, that we have to kill him because he is a Raide, then we run into the whole problem that all of a sudden I become Ois Raide when he pops his head out.
Reb Chaim
doesn't have to worry about that.
I'm just asking a different question, Alan. Are you comfortable? Because I'm not that, honestly. Yeah. Are you comfortable with saying that ain docha nefesh b'nei nefesh applies to the Rodef no less than it does to, applies to the Ubar, no less than it applies to an adult, you know, who's walking on.
I said even apply it to an adult. In other words, there is a writing. The din
no,
of ain docha nefesh b'nei nefesh.
I'm not up to that. Leave out Rodef. I want to know if you're comfortable with this. One, you know, just as Keta, because I think
you can't be that the Ubar is safe because ain docha nefesh b'nei nefesh.
Right. But we will not violate the Shabbos.
Yes.
To save the Ubar. I'm not comfortable. I don't think the Chazanish was comfortable.
I don't see what his
problem. The Chazanish was even willing to say that you could be docha Shabbos, but the Ubar is not an effort. So even if you don't want to go with the Chazanish, the middle way is the way I presented it at the beginning of the Shia, then maybe the issue of whether or not an Uber justifies Chil Shabbos depends upon what's his status as far as Ein Doch Nefesh Bnei Nefesh. If you're going to say Ein Doch Nefesh Bnei Nefesh applies to the Uber, then violate the Shabbos. If Ein Doch Nefesh Bnei Nefesh does not apply to the case of the Uber, he's not a Nefesh, then you won't violate the Shabbos. That's where I wanted to go. But the Gedolei Achronim, you're talking about Reb Chaim HaChasidish, felt that Berzon's approach was too superficial. It's flat. We got to go deeper. And we got to say that there are Tzvei Dinim. There are two different sets of halachas, two different systems, and they never the twain shall meet. I have to ask one question about Hilchos Pikuach Nefesh my Docha Shabbos. And I have to ask another question, entirely different question, about Ein Docha Nefesh Bnei Nefesh.
That's right.
Okay, let me accept that position.
Different set of rules.
But I would say that if they're a different set of rules, then grant me the following. Grant me the following, that if you're going to tell me that Ein Docha Nefesh B'nei Nefesh, that we're not willing to sacrifice the life of a fetus for the sake of the life of the mother, then can't we be Docha Shabbos for the sake of the fetus? That's where I have problems with Reb Chaim. The Chazanish wants to go even further. The Chazanish wants to say that, you know what? Maybe we'll be Docha Shabbos, but we're not going to forfeit the mother's life for the sake of the Uber. That I can hear. We'll be Docha Shabbos because Chach, we have an Nefesh here of some sense. But to go the other extreme of Chaim's approach and say, you know what, we're not going to violate the Shabbos, no way, no how. The Nefesh of the Uber is not good enough, so to speak. Again, I'm using a very childish term here. But it's not good enough to override the Shabbos. But you know what? Let the mother die and save the Uber. Again, when there's no din of a rule. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see. But I think...
I'm just uncomfortable.
I think that Reb Chaim is saying in the Rambam a very important thing, because he puts in... Who needed him to put in the whole thing up there about Kiroi Day fall together? He didn't need... The Rambam didn't need to put it in all together.
Correct.
I think that he's
correct. That was the first half of my shiur to me. That, why does the Rambam need Rode? Because the Uber is a Nefesh.
Because it's a Nefesh. And how do you know it's
a Nefesh? But I'm just asking a different question, because I'm learning Yuma, I'm not learning Sanhedrin. So if the Uber is a Nefesh, and if you have no right to snub him out for the sake of the mother, so why can't you violate the Shabbos for that Nefesh? That question I don't find an answer to. And the Chazanish, I think, is much more, in a sense, emotionally at least, comfortable to accept, because the Chazanish is saying that you have to save the mother, says the Chazanish. Again, leaving out Rode.
Right.
And the Nefesh just doesn't come up to that level of saving the mother, says the Chazanish. I don't even care. You know what? You want to violate the Shabbos for the sake of the Uber? Wonderful. For Chaybohem. I mean, this Uber has a right to violate the Shabbos. I'm not sure if he's up to par with the mother in that comparison. Fine. That I can understand. I feel emotionally comfortable with the philosophy, so to speak, of the Chazanish. But the philosophy of Reb Chaim here, I can't get it down. You're telling me that he's a Nefesh, let the mother die, save this Nefesh at all costs, unless he's a Rodef, of course. And then you turn around and you say, but we won't violate the Shabbos. I don't know,
different sets of rules, they have nothing to do with each other.
Okay, there's a cause of me to complain. I'm not, who am I to question Xeris HaKosim? But I'm just telling you, this Xeris HaKosim is not something that makes me feel comfortable.
You
let the Uber die. Oh, you know what? We're going to let the mother die and not let the Uber die. We will actively, if we need be, you know, do what we have to do to save the Uber, because the Uber is a Nefesh. And Ein Docha Nefesh Bnei Nefesh. But we're not going to violate the Shabbos. Yeah, it's like funny.
No.
You know, where does this all fit in? I mean, in Hilchos priorities, human life takes priority over the Shabbos. You're willing to say that the life of the Uber is not inferior to the life of the mother. That's what Reb Chaim is saying.
Right.
Unless you introduce Rode.
No,
so if the life of the Uber fits or meets up to the standards of the life of the mother, why should I override the Shabbos? Shabbos is inferior to human life. How do I know this? Because the Torah says, V'chaim v'loi shiyaros.
But you can see an introduction.
So you're telling me you're dealing with different rules, and I can accept that, but it's very uncomfortable to say that the Nefesh of the Uber just doesn't meet, you know, cut the mustard as far as being Docha Shabbos, and then as far as the life of another Nefesh, it's on par.
You can see the difference in the rules right away when they talk about.
Can you identify my?
Yeah, but I understand what you're saying.
You know,
but
can also, you empathize? That's
you
all. I'm looking for empathy. That's all.
No. I can see. I hear you.
Yeah.
But you know, you can see when they discuss about Hasra, by Hasra, by Roydev, right? And you don't have to have Hasra by a Roydev. Why don't you have Hasra by a Roydev? Because Hasra is only important as a legal technicality if he's coming.